Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable tonight with some of the top stories of the week. And boy, do we have a lot to talk about tonight. Golfing superstar Tiger Woods in the hospital tonight after a very serious accident in California. An unredacted report about racial discrimination in the Prince George's County Police Department. Schools also reopening in Prince George's County. And yes, there is still trouble in Texas. My guests are NBC4 Prince George's County Bureau Chief Tracy Wilkins and James Wright, D.C. reporter for The Washington Informer, and you, our listeners. Lines are open if you want to jump in and join the conversation at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Tracy, James, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you for having me.
Let me start with you, Tracy. My goodness, the situation with Tiger Woods still in the hospital. We understand he still may be in surgery, but he was conscious. What a close call for him.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure that a number of your viewers, along with me, watched what was going on with Tiger in that HBO documentary. They really broke down a lot of what's happened in his life and just how difficult it has been for him, the weight that was on his shoulders, and how much of a spotlight is on him every time that something happens in his life. And this is, of course, significant. And it seems that the world is just, everyone is paying attention to what's happening right now. We led our newscast at 6 p.m. with it as breaking news with live reports from the Sheriff's Department and what's happening with him. And it was just interesting to reflect once again on the fact that this is a man who is a national treasure, who's broken records, who has done things in the game and the sport of golf that no golfer has done in the history of that sport. Barriers that have been broken by Tiger Woods. And, you know, as we said in our newscast, someone who has risen to the greatest heights of his sport, but then has also been in the public eye when he has dealt with some of the most difficult circumstances as well. So I know everyone is praying for him and hoping that he comes out of this okay.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of the interesting things with the Masters, James, just 2 months away, and there was always this talk about him coming back to the Masters, his last championship in 2019, big comeback, but he's also had five back surgeries, the last one just a month or so ago. And to have something like this happen when so many people are hoping for a comeback, you know, everybody likes a comeback story, but this may be a rough row to hoe.
Well, Harold, I'm very happy to be on the show. Tiger has not had an easy life, and a lot of us look at all of the awards that he's won, the number of green jackets, how he has really set the pace for golf, how he has encouraged people of color to get into golf, and not only just playing the game itself, but getting to the business side of the game. And yet that weighs on him a lot, and I've talked to various people, and they know that he's under a lot of pressure. And then we had the situation with his marriage and a family situation, his father passing away, that has continued to weigh in on him. I certainly hope that he is okay. I learned in driver's ed that when you have an accident like that, it's not because of the vehicle itself, but it has to do with the driver. And something's going on with the driver. Maybe his concentration wasn't on the road as it should be. And when you are somebody like Tiger Woods, with so much on your mind with the sport and your family and the situations and the expectations that he has had to deal with all his life, accidents do happen. That's what I learned in driver's ed. I certainly hope that he is okay. Not just the icon, Harold, but just as a human being, and to be able to straighten those things out. And if he needs time to take to straighten those things out as well as heal from this injury, he should do it. His life is more important than just being an icon.
I agree with that. I think, you know, to a point, you know, Tiger Woods is one of the wealthiest athletes in history right now. But we see that as a result of not just what we saw happening today, but some of the issues that he has had with his health and with his personal life, money isn't everything. And that there are certainly more, you know, more important things. And we also realize after, you know, looking at his life, as Tracy was pointing out, is that despite the fame, despite the money, he is very much like everyone else, with vulnerabilities, problems, and the like. And this is, I think this is an opportunity for us to take stock in, you know, like you said, how we drive, paying attention to what's going on with us, and to give thanks that he did come out of it, because as we have seen, even in our area, driving is not always the thing that you, it's not always the best situation. We've had some people die on our roads and, you know, just driving around. So, you know, something certainly to consider. I do want to move on to one of the other big stories. This would have been the big story had it not been for this Tiger Woods incident today, Tracy. This situation in Prince George's County, this unredacted report is part of this federal lawsuit filed by officers of color in Prince George's County. Kind of give us the cliff notes of what happened yesterday when this report was finally released.
Well, this is a report that the Prince George's County government has been fighting for months to try and keep concealed. There was a partially or almost completely redacted report that was released after the officers and their attorney and their attorneys and the ACLU fought to have the fully redacted or unredacted version of this report made public. And, you know, Harold, I don't know if you've had a chance to read through it. We have a full report web story on NBC Washington. If you search police lawsuit, you can take a look at this report. You can read through what's in it. It is very disturbing, these allegations, to read it all in one sitting. And I wouldn't suggest reading it all in one sitting, because it is hard to read and to see what these officers are accused of, to read emails that were exchanged between officers, to see the racist comments that were made, and then to read that there were no investigations done, that they couldn't find evidence of investigations, that they couldn't find evidence that complaints were taken seriously, not only complaints by officers on other officers, but complaints from citizens, even complaints from county council members. There was one instance of a Prince George's County state prosecutor who had a run-in with police officers and felt that she was the victim of harassment and filed a complaint that they couldn't find any record of it ever being investigated. Some of our own reporting, stories we've done, where we talked with the former chief Hank Stawinski, and he said this is something we're going to look into and investigate. And that report, they said it was never investigated. It was never looked into. Discipline that was promised, they couldn't find any records of it. So you have that, and then that same day that report was made public with names now unredacted, we could see which officers had said what and who sent what emails, and all of the black marks had been removed. The county also counters with its own report. So Chief Tom Manger, who was the chief of Montgomery County and also Fairfax County, well-respected law enforcement leader, who is now doing consulting work, and did its own investigation into that report that the officers had, and into the department, and said, you know what, we feel like this department is doing everything it should be doing. It's not only meeting best practices, but in some cases surpassing them. And is a department that is setting a good example. And this report alleging discrimination by these officers or this lawsuit has no merit. But the thing that's important to know about what happened with Manger's report is that when that was entered into evidence 2 months later, Prince George's County Executive's own task force that was looking into the Prince George's County Police Department came back with 50 recommendations for what the department needed to do to improve, 50 things that it wasn't doing correctly. And a lot of it had to do with what was in the police officer's initial report, and that is lack of oversight, lack of investigation, lack of policies to follow up on, an internal affairs unit that wasn't doing what it was supposed to do. So today, the big news was the ACLU, NAACP, CASA, a number of citizens, folks who live in Prince George's County, coming out and saying, you know, we need to get rid of the interim chief of police. We need to get rid of his boss, who was the former chief of police, and the former head of IA, who's still working for the department and had some disturbing emails in that initial police report. And, you know, the county countering back again and saying, look, you know, we stand by our report. We stand by our department. Yes, we need to reform our department. We've got all of these recommendations that we are going to implement to reform the department. But in the meantime, there's no merit in anything that these officers who are suing the department are alleging, and we're going to defend it. $13.7 million have already been spent in this lawsuit, and it hasn't gone to trial yet.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about the top stories of the week. Right now, we are talking about this report as part of the federal lawsuit by officers of color in Prince George's County. Unredacted yesterday, and a lot of difficult stuff coming out of that report. Again, if you have a comment or if you have a question, 202-319-7810. So, James, I one of the things that I find fascinating, and Tracy did an excellent job of just, you know, kind of breaking it down, where you have a former chief Manger's a report saying essentially we're good, but then the police our reform panel that was initiated by the county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, essentially said, we're not good. And then we have this unredacted report that says, not only are we not good, we're really, really bad. Are you surprised from what was coming out of this unredacted report, where it points fingers in just about every single direction?
Harold, full disclosure, I am a 2011 graduate of the Prince George's County Citizens Police Academy. So I have a sort of grassroots understanding of what goes on in terms of the police department here. And again, I want to stress, Tracy, excellent report in terms of this. You asked me, am I surprised? And I will tell you, yes. And let me tell you why, because my interactions with police officers, and I don't have that many, but I do know them, they don't talk about this. They talk about other things. They talk about the job or what's going on in terms of crime and things like that, Errol. They don't talk about all of this stuff, about emails and racist things. And that's a surprise to a lot of those of us who are in the community. And this is unfortunate, not only because this is a county which is majority black and affluent, but I thought that we kind of got over this. I mean, this is so 1980s, 1990s stuff, and you have more black officers, and we believe that you would have more people in terms of black people in management there, but it appears that things have really gotten worse. So this really needs to be followed through, and Tracy should be commended for what she has done.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable right now, taking a look at this newly unredacted report on racism and racial discrimination in the Prince George's County Police Department. Bobby Henry calling on the line. Hey, Bobby, how are you?
Hey, Errol, how's it going today?
I'm doing okay. What's on your mind?
Good. Well, you know what? Just calling in. I'm always listening to your show, and I enjoy it so much, and thank you for what you do for the community. But having lived in Prince George's County predominantly my whole life and run a practice here for over 25 years, and I interact, you know, with law enforcement on a daily basis, you know, a very frequent basis, let me say it that way. And all I'll say with regards to the report is this. There are a number of really, really good men and women that put their lives on the line each and every day. Each and every day. And we thank them for the selfless job that they do each and every day. But there are some that are there, that are in the department, that are not doing what's correct. They know they're not doing what's correct. And there are others in there that, you know, look the other way when that happens. So, you know, you've got these two competing reports that have come out. And I would say the one that was done by the, consulting police chiefs on behalf of the county that says that nothing is wrong, they're doing everything right, you have to look at that with somewhat of a skeptical eye. Simply because Prince George's County is a microcosm of America. We know what's going on across the country in America. Why would we think that we're living in Prince George's County and that does not happen here? I tend to think that we need to remove the individuals that are in leadership, that have any culpability, in this matter. They need to be replaced, and we need to look within. We need to look within, and we need to have representation in the uppermost parts of law enforcement that represent the community. That's my take on it.
All right, Bobby, thank you so much. I appreciate your phone
call. Harold, if I could just comment on
please go right ahead.
Bobby said that are really important. He made an excellent point when he said that there are a number of officers who are doing the right thing. It's more than it's the majority of the department that's
Absolutely.
Doing the right thing. And what it appears from my reporting and from what was in that initial report from the officers that they had done by a sheriff's, and I should say this, that initial report that was done on behalf of these officers of color, it was compiled by a former Los Angeles sheriff's deputy who does this work for the U.S. Justice Department, the U.S. Department of Justice, and a number of other policing agencies. This is consulting work that he does around the country. Chief Stawinski said in a deposition that's also on our website that is now public as well, that when this lawsuit was first filed, he wanted to step down and said as much to the county executive, but he says he was encouraged to stay on and did stay on. When that report first went public, the redacted version, hours later, he stepped down, and he was very clear in his deposition that, you know, people are saying I resigned, I retired. Mm-hmm. I didn't resign. So he wanted to be clear, but it was because of this report. But I do want to say this about what Bobby said. What we have found is that there really are a minority of officers, a small number, who are these repeat offenders, the ones who have multiple cases of use of force, the ones who keep coming back up over and over and over again.
Well, Tracy, hold your point, and I hate to interrupt you. I've just got to take a really quick break, and I'll let you finish your point. We are at the Reporters Roundtable right here on the Insight segment on the Daily Drums. I'm going to take a quick break. Stay with us. We will continue on SiriusXM, Channel 141, and, of course, 96.3 HD2. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We'll continue this conversation in just a few seconds. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. My guests are James Wright, D.C. reporter for the Washington Informer, and NBC4 Prince George's County Bureau Chief Tracy Wilkins. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tracy, you can finish your point.
Yeah, so the bottom line is that, as I was saying, there really are a small number of officers in comparison to the rest of the department who appear to be repeat offenders here. And, you know, so when asked, why aren't these officers being held responsible? Why isn't Internal Affairs following through with taking a look at what's happening with these complaints? The former chief said in his deposition, you know, I handed all that to Assistant Chief Velez, who is now the interim chief for the Prince George's County Police Department, which is true that Velez was over Internal Affairs. If there were issues of Internal Affairs, if investigations weren't getting completed, if reports weren't crossing his desk, that appears to me that it falls in the lap of both Velez and then also former Chief Stawinski with the oversight that, you know, he had the final say. But, yeah, there was a lot of authority, a lot put in the lap of Velez. And why that is important, because he's interim chief. And there's talk about the possibility of him being asked to take that position on permanently. So there are a lot of conversations to be had about what happened in the department, what didn't go right before, and what can be done to improve it moving forward.
Yeah. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So, yes, I was just telling the young lady that I'm not shocked at all. And for that gentleman to say that he is surprised, being a young African-American female who has gone through the process with certain police departments, it's in your face. I've even went through the process with Baltimore County, where they have blatantly told me the only reason they were going to hire me, if they hired me, was because I was an African-American female. You know, and it shouldn't. Like, I see it in the training centers, sometimes from some of the instructors, the way they train these officers. It's a cult-like mentality. Mm-hmm. And what needs to happen is where we start getting a lot of the younger generation into the position of power, teaching the younger generation to be better officers. Because when you have people that have been in charge for so long, their mentality does not change. It doesn't change. And like I said, I've been through it. I've witnessed it. So I'm not surprised at all. I've even been through the process with Baltimore City where they won't even hire me. And I was born and raised in Baltimore City. But you'll go to the New Jersey and all these other cities and hire people who are good people, who live their life the right way, who've done all the right things, who want to serve their community, and you won't even hire them.
Okay. Pam, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your input. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are at the Reporters Roundtable talking about some of the top stories of the week. Go ahead, James.
Well, Harold, I'm not being naive. I mean, of course you have a great deal of problems, as Tracy has documented in her reporting, in terms of the police department, and it still apparently hasn't shaken off its old reputation of being very, very harsh toward African Americans. What I am saying is that they are putting on a good public front for the public. For example, here I live in an inner beltway community. If there's a community meeting, for example, Joanne Benson's 202 Coalition, they have the Prince George's Police Department is there. You have the coffee club that meets at the Wegmans the first Wednesday of every month. The Prince George's Police Department is there. And they're putting on a good front, Harold. But this report points out that they're covering up a lot of things, and that blue code is stronger than many people who are not as informed as Bobby Henry or even Tracy. Is much stronger than a lot of people think it is.
Well, and here's the other thing that occurred to me, considering the incidents that are in this report, the email and everything else. If you are a black officer, and I'm sure this is the genesis of the lawsuit, you are now, particularly after this unredacted report has come out, it's almost like the Capitol Hill insurrection, where officers of color may be looking at other Capitol Hill police officers who, as we've seen on video, allowed the insurrectionists to just come in. Yeah. And now you're wondering, you know, who can you trust as a black officer when the stuff hits the fan, and I'm sure Tracy it would make you extremely uncomfortable, and these are probably some of the other concerns that these officers of color have.
They do. They have concerns about being out in the field, and there being some officers who they can trust, and then others who they can't. I mean, I've heard that expressed, the idea of, I don't know who has my back or who doesn't have my back. But that's mm-hmm. something that is definitely expressed and something that they talk about in their social media chat rooms, that very issue. I think that one of the questions that every police department across this country and Prince George's County Police Department, what everybody needs to ask themselves is, are we okay with a little bit of racist behavior? Do we have a zero tolerance policy, or do we let some of this stuff go because we think that this person really is a good guy, you know, or is a good person?
A little bit of racist behavior.
And right. Like, so is it that we're going to change the culture to the point where there is none of this and it's not allowed and it's completely unacceptable, as is the case in a number of our work environments, right? Or is it going to be that, well, it's okay. And
it's,
I think
it's like
that,
being a little bit pregnant.
Right. And who are we making these kinds of exceptions for? So those are the kinds of things that I think that everybody has to take a close look at. The task force has said as much in its report that there really needs to be a close look at the culture of what's happening and what is and is not what is and isn't acceptable, and its own procedures for how they figure that out. And part of what they said is, look, we need to remove all of the folks who are overseeing this department and policing the police out of the police department. We need to take the inspector general out. We need to separate these people who are holding these folks responsible so that they can have fresh air to breathe and look at this from a different perspective where they're not inside of the department policing the department.
Also,
the task force recommendations are an interesting read as well.
And I was about to bring that up, but not as it relates to the task force itself, but when the report was finished, the county executive, Angela Alsobrooks, Brooks, she had a press conference. She thanked everybody, told everyone what a great job they did. We have not heard much of anything from the county executive other than statements and the like about this issue. And I think it's not a difficult argument, particularly considering her career path to the county executive's office, that she was the county state's attorney. Mm-hmm. The law and order, the chief prosecutor person before becoming county executive, and not hearing from her right now, I think, is problematic.
Well, I will say that in my reporting, the office has been very responsive to all of my questions. When I ask them for a response to the things that I'm hearing from the police department or asking for comment, they have, you know, quickly responded and been, to this point, clear about where they stand on all of this. And so has County Executive Alsobrooks. Whether one agrees or not, her perspective on this is this. This is a lawsuit that's been filed in court, and it needs to be settled in court. So she's not going to have a press conference every time the officers and the plaintiffs in this case have a press conference. Her feeling is, let the courts decide. And her attorneys have made it very clear that they believe that nothing wrong has been done here, that there has been no practice of discrimination within the police department, that these officers have no basis for their lawsuit, and they're going to fight it tooth and nail. And as I said, $13.7 million in fees and a private law firm that they have hired out of Baltimore, and expert reports that help to pay for Manger's report. These are taxpayer dollars that are going into this effort. So they obviously believe that this is something that's worth that much money. And it's not over yet. As we said, it hasn't gone to trial yet. But the county executive has made it very clear that she's not going to respond every time they do something. She's saying that she does not want to try this in the media, that she's going to try this in court. And as a prosecutor and as a lifelong attorney, that's her stance on it.
And I do see that point. I would argue that, and that's the black and white of it, certainly. The optics of it, considering, you know, where we are right now in the midst of a continuing social justice crisis that this country is going through, issues with the community and policing and the push and pull struggle would probably give a lot of, you know, a lot of people, you know, pause about that. Mm-hmm. But as you said, we shall see how this plays out in court. Yes, the wheels of justice turn slowly, but let's hope that they continue to
turn. And then also what the citizens do too, right?
Yes.
Because that's a part of this too. And so whatever the county is doing now, it's a representation of the citizens who live in the county and pay for county government and for county leaders. So, you know, county government and any government anywhere can do as much as the citizens allow it to do.
Excellent point.
And so, you know, it's just a matter of how do the folks of the county feel about it, you know?
James, you were about to say something.
Yeah, Harold, Prince George's, the mechanics of the politics of Prince George's County can get very complicated, and it can also be very simple. You and I both know, and Tracy definitely knows this, that Angela Alsobrooks may be looking to go somewhere else. And in order to go somewhere else, she will need the support, and I'll be blunt about it, the police union, if she can get it. And she definitely would want to have that if that is her desire. And that's the thing that's kind of just throwing, making this all the more confusing. And this is why you have a lot of people on the fence. And the folks that I know in Prince George's are on the fence. And maybe this is the reason the county executive is not saying anything with regard to what Tracy is saying. She's absolutely right. But again, I stress, Angela Alsobrooks wants to go somewhere else, and she may not want to cause too many fires in order to get where she wants to go.
Well, let's talk about yet another fire, if not smoldering embers, in the Prince George's County School Board. We've seen the newly appointed school board chair, Juanita Miller, talk about a probe or raise questions about contracts and ethics on the board. She's not been on the board that long. And, you know, in the midst of trying to figure out how the return to school is going to operate, parents, teachers asking so many questions and the like, this is also another politically challenging situation, Tracy.
Yeah, well, you know, Juanita Miller was appointed to the board by County Executive Alsobrooks. Her
yes.
choice to replace Dr. Thornton when he stepped down, and not so much stepped down, but his term was over, and it was up to him to decide if he wanted to, you know, move into another term or to leave. And we had a conversation about this and reported this on NBC4 Washington, that he said, you know, I'm going to put my energy into some other places and allow the board to move with a new chair. And this was the county executive's choice. You know, Juanita Miller has a storied history of doing some of the same kind of stuff with other boards that she has served on, the WSSC board, famously. She was a draw for some of those meetings, and I think we even forgot that the WSSC board met because of some of the things that would happen in those meetings when she was there. But, I mean, this is a person who has been in the county for a very long period of time, has, you know, run for a number of offices, has held some offices, and so, you know, what's happening here, though, the board members who are opposed to what she's doing, which is basically, at one point, she said, you know, we're not going to meet until I have an investigation into what's going on with this board, and until I, you know, she called the county council, and the county council wrote a letter to them, and they said, well, this isn't really what we do, so, you know, get in touch with the State Board of Education, which she also did. State Board of Education say they're going to look into it, but, you know, her complaint is, for a contract that was taken out by the majority elected members of the board, that was done during a public session with a public vote. And from my reporting, what I have seen and heard, it was considered legal and signed off on by, you know, all of the channels that are supposed to do that. And it was for a $120,000 contract for them to have a lobbyist go down to Annapolis and to lobby to make the board a fully elected board again. And it was County Executive Sherm Baker who turned it into a hybrid board, where you have some folks who are appointed and some who are elected. And ever since then, there's been this divide in a board that has always been divided. And boards of education can be such a powder keg anyway.
Yeah, it can be.
So the thing that they're fighting over is who's hybrid, who's elected, and all that. So now the elected board that has the majority is saying, let's get a lobbyist down and see if we can convince Annapolis to give us back a fully elected board. And there are plenty of folks who feel like that's a waste of energy and time right now because the school system needs money, they need resources, we're dealing with a pandemic. There's so many other things that they just feel like this is ill-timed. And what Miller is saying is that she thinks it's also immoral or, you know, illegal or whatever that she's saying. And so at one point she said, we're going to stop meeting. And now she's saying, well, okay, fine, we'll meet, but we're meeting with this really diluted agenda, not at all what business we were dealing with before, just much less. And so there are some people who are like, what is going on? Like, we have a lot of work to do as a board.
Yes, there's a cloud. There just seems to be this cloud over the school board. And as I said, and as you, you know, reiterated, you know, Tracy, we're in the midst of a pandemic. We are still looking at concerns about returning to the classroom. Hybrids.
Teachers need to be vaccinated.
Yes, teachers that need to be HVAC systems that need to be repaired, and you know, and the whole bit, and certainly, you know, outside of this ethics probe, these are not things that other school systems are not going through. Everybody's doing this. Everybody's having these questions. You know, the teachers in Montgomery County are upset, and the teachers in Fairfax County are upset, and the teachers in Detroit are upset, and the teachers in Chicago are. So it's not, you know, that's not unusual. But I think this situation, James, with the school board makes it just that much more difficult to handle.
You're correct. I had a chance to speak with a few board members about this, on the record conversations, as we journalists do. And the concern is that Juanita Miller is not happy, Harold, because she's not in charge. And she's not in charge, so she's just going to take her blocks and go home. And that is her approach. I was also told about some of the problems that you just mentioned in terms of the pandemic, in terms of getting everybody vaccinated, but other issues like modernizing buildings, trying to recruit personnel for Prince George's County Schools. Those issues are not being addressed because the board is dysfunctional at this point. And it's interesting that you put Juanita Miller there at this time, and she's not necessarily known as a consensus builder, which is exactly what that board needs, is a consensus builder. One last thing, you know, she talks about, Juanita Miller talks about issues of ethics and contracts and things, but where is the solid evidence to this? And why hasn't good reporters like Tracy been presented solid evidence of these things? And really what this is it would appear to some people in the community and to the board members that I talked to, is just simply a power grab. She wants more power.
Well, we shall see how that plays out, as these things always do. During these last handful of minutes, I do want to turn our attention to Texas, because, as you know, as they say, you know, everything's big in Texas, including their problems. and we have seen just today that four members of the board that manages the power grid resigned today, even as Texans are still dealing with water issues. Yeah, the power has come back on for almost everyone there, but there are just so many issues, and certainly we can't do anything about the weather per se. And I'll start with you about this, James, and Texans, and I would argue, you know, most people, most Southerners are not necessarily, they're not wholly familiar with the kind of weather that Texas saw last week. But my goodness, this was just an incredible failure.
Oh, it was an incredible failure. And like you just said, I am a former Texan, and I'm very well of the weather and the energy issues in that state. It broke down. And not only did it break down, they were told, ERCOT was told, Harold, in 2011, that they needed to winterize the energy grid. And just so your listeners understand, Texas, well, most of Texas has its own energy grid. And they did this for free market reasons, but they also wanted to do it out of being cheap. And we saw what happened last week when unexpectedly the temperatures really, really went low. I mean, it does not get that low in Texas. And people were totally unprepared. And all I can say is that this is Texas. And the people need to really stand up and say something about this, because if they don't, they're not going to repair that energy grid as they should. And you could have this happen in a few years.
Am I overstating it, Tracy, to say this kind of thing shouldn't happen in America?
This kind of thing should not happen in America.
Okay, thank you.
You are not overstating. This kind of thing should not happen in America. We should be investing in our infrastructure. We should be paying attention to who's making money off of our infrastructure. Are we living in America, or are we living on a monopoly game board? You know, what's happening here? And with these basic necessities, who are we allowing to make money off of these things that we need, and who is supervising how they're doing it? And who's holding them accountable? And so these are the kinds of questions that Texans are going to do, and not just Texans, but all of us, especially as we deal with global warming, as we deal with the change in our environment and what's happening in our climate. We have to know that we are protected and that we're in a place where our government's looking out for our best interests now more than ever, as our infrastructure continues to be challenged. And what's happened in Texas is an opportunity for everyone to take a close look at what are we not paying attention to, and who are we not holding accountable for these basic necessities that we can't provide for ourselves. We need folks to take care of this for us, and we just need to make sure that the oversight is there and that the accountability is there.
And I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think the big issue is, as it relates to trying to figure out how to hold people accountable. Okay, you have these board members who have resigned. By the way, you know, Associated Press reporting that the four members who stepped down don't even live in the state of Texas. And that we have seeing the issue with, of course, Ted Cruz going to Cancun and then turning around and coming back, and all of the other political finger pointing. But the thing that, in addition to the accountability piece, that bothers me the most. We've seen, you know, here in the D.C. Metro, we've had power outages, and we've had them out for, you know, a day or so. And, you know, arguably, whether it's, you know, a Pepco or a BGE or Dominion or someone like that, you know, they respond. But this water thing that's happening as a result of the freezes, and that you're having whole communities, you know, without water, or, you know, the boiling water. And this has been going on now for a week. That is the thing that I find most troubling, which brings me back to the piece about this should not be, you know, happening in America. That is most troubling to me, still without running water.
And then
question.
Go ahead, James.
I just wanted to say, you have people like Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, blaming the Green New Deal for what happened. And the Green New Deal is not law. And then they talk about, some of the conservatives are talking about AOC being in Houston, helping people, handing out water and that sort of thing. And a lot of those folks are just not in reality, Errol. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. It is, you know, it continues to be a very, very troubling situation. Certainly, you know, our thoughts, if I can be allowed to that constant refrain, our thoughts and our prayers for the people who are not in charge, who have suffered as a result of this situation. I just can't, I just cannot imagine, you know, necessarily, you know, what they're going through. One final question, and I want to go back to this Prince George's County thing. Where is this going? Why was this report originally redacted? And that's one of the things that I had a question about, Tracy. Why was it originally redacted? And
the Maryland Law Enforcement Bill of Rights, which was created in Maryland and became a blueprint for a number of police departments across the country for special rights for police officers, special protections, unlike any other protections provided to U.S. citizens, are allowed for police officers under the Maryland Law Enforcement Bill of Rights. Right now, there are a number of bills in Annapolis that have more energy behind them than ever before after the uprising this summer to repeal, in some cases, the entire law, to reform it, to take pieces of it apart. But there are, you know, those who say that you got to just burn the whole thing down and start over again because it has been abused. In these protections, like, so for instance, parts of the report that were redacted before, I mean, you have people, there was a name of one sergeant that was redacted who was calling fellow black officers baboons. And one was like it was something incredibly racist. It was like butt slapping something else that they, I mean, it was like the craziest term, like from straight out of like the 60s or something, like a long time ago, when people, like, old school racist comments that this officer was posting on his social media account. And they wanted to protect this officer's identity after having the social media postings. But I mean, that's not what the original intent of the Law Enforcement Officer Bill of Rights was, but that name was redacted. And there were some other names for some other odd things that were redacted in the report. And so it just, but that's what that was, though. The bottom line is that was about officers having incredible amount of rights until investigations are complete, and then even after that, still having rights. And there are a number of reasons. And if the FOP were here, they would give you a number of reasons for why that happened, some of it being to protect the officers, allowing them to make decisions in the field without worrying about retaliation or punishment or lawsuits, or to protect them from frivolous lawsuits. Like, there are a number of reasons for why they say that they have that, but that's why so much of this document was redacted. And after it was unredacted, and the judge said this, it is in the people's interest. And I can't remember his exact quote now, but it was something to the extent of, like, this is extremely in the interest of the public for them to be able to see this. And it's important for folks to also know that the Prince George's County State's Attorney's Office and the Public Defender's Office also came out and spoke a number of times and testified, look, we want to see this report. We work with these officers. They testify for the state's attorney's perspective. They testify for my office, for the public defenders. They testify against my people. I want to know who these people are.
Well,
and
Tracy,
we need to see their name.
I've got to stop you there. And we will continue to have this conversation and continue to watch as this all plays out. I thank you, James Wright and Tracy Wilkins, for talking to us.
Thank you.
And good to meet you, James.
Good to meet you, Tracy. Keep up the work.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, February 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.